The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
We're already back. It's our normal recording time for post-game Niners stuff, but we're not talking about the Niners because they didn't play this wild card weekend in the first round of the NFL playoffs. Rod, what is going on?
Man, nothing much. A lot of football this weekend. It's been weird. You know, it's been a while since we haven't been involved, but I can come up with some Niner stuff as we move on.
There's a lot of stuff happened. Like they had the season ending press conference with Shanahan and Lynch, and so there's news out of that. Niners are going to be looking for a defensive coordinator and a special teams coordinator, unless they stay in house. There's questions about certain folks with their contracts. So we'll talk about all of that stuff. And this is our second show in a row on the network because Brian and I finally got back and we talked about the very average Warriors and wondering if there was any possibility for them to do anything that would make a difference with the team or if we're just going to be stuck at 41-41 by the end of this season. And then on Tuesday, 5:30-ish p.m. for the live stream, but Tuesday evening for the Wednesday morning for the audio feed. Brad and I will be back. So pretty good for three shows in 4 days for this network. So good stuff. And I guess we should just lead off here with kind of what's going on in Ninerland. Now I'm going to be playing with segments and stuff because it's just kind of trying to make the shows fun. So I decided to call this first segment, which is just kind of catching up on the news. I just decided to call it What's Happening. And it would have been really cool if there wasn't stuff like copyright where I could just play the What's Happening theme song in the background on something. But I think I'm okay just by grabbing like a 2-second clip. For those of you who are around the age of Rod and I, you will understand this, and those will not. Well, I'll explain it to you in a second here.
I be Roger Thomas. Which do be you be?
All right. That is the What's Happening segment here, and that was from an episode, maybe one of the most famous What's Happening episodes. They were like pirating Doobie Brothers concert footage or something for tape and
horribly.
Roger decided to call the hotel in which the Doobies were staying just so he could make puns about the Doobie Brothers name. So that is the first segment here. And let's just catch up on everything that happened since we last recorded. So I think this was pretty predictable as we were finishing up the season. Nick Sorensen was relieved of his duties as the defensive coordinator. And I think partially it is because of who's out there, essentially, who could possibly be hired as the incoming defensive coordinator. Now, Shanahan specifically said he likes the flexibility. Obviously, you know the system, that wide nine system. But also he likes more flexibility with more veteran coordinators when it comes to having to change up the defense a little bit. And obviously Nick Sorensen, a rookie DC. And Who is out there? Well, one is Robert Saleh, former defensive coordinator for the Niners, who has been the New York Jets coach. What do you think about the Saleh thing? And is it possible? And this is my I'll give you my biggest worry here about this right out of the gate. I worry that they're just waiting, and then somebody's going to hire him to be a head coach. And that may not happen, actually. But just the fact that they're kind of, they may be putting all of their eggs in this one Robert Saleh basket, and then may not get him, and they may have to key on other folks. What are your thoughts on bringing Saleh back to the table?
Well, I think it would be great if they could get him. I've got several questions. One, as I look at the landscape of NFL jobs, there are five of them. And I don't see five candidates better than him for coaches. If you want to say Ben Johnson, okay, I'll give you that. If you want to say Aaron Glenn, but then it like really slides into Coach Prime crazy town. And then, if we disregard that, I don't know that that's really a thing with the Raiders, but nothing will surprise me at this point with that outfit. But then you quickly descend into guys like who are coordinators like Joe Brady and Mike Kafka and Bobby Slowick and, Kellen Moore. I don't think any of those guys and then the best one to me is Brian Flores, who, as people don't remember, some people clearly don't remember, he's still in litigation his last head coaching job. So I was telling somebody today, I believe that he is a head coach candidate when he is on the podium at his introductory press conference. I just don't see that. And so when you throw all those hats in the ring, I think that Saleh, whom I think is going to get a pass for sure because of the shit show that the Jets are and his son and his Madden ratings and all of that, I don't think that's going to stick to him the way some people do, his failure there. Because I think that is a horrible job.
Yeah.
So I think that he will be as viable candidate as viable a candidate as there is left on the market. And then that doesn't even take into account that once the musical chairs stop at head coach, I'm not sure that the 49ers defensive coordinator job is even the best one available based on the talent that, like, for example, the Jaguars have. You take the talent that they actually have in-house on defense and couple that with the war chest they have to go out and get free agents. I don't know that if you look at the roster, defensive roster as it sits right now for the 49ers, coupled with the performance that they made, I just don't see who, okay, we could say injuries. Okay, that's fine. Let's do that. Who was injured, who is not an unrestricted free agent, is going to come in and make this team better. I just don't see that. The two obvious names are Mooney, who I think is gone, because I think his market will be way above what the 49ers are willing to pay. And then everything I'm seeing says that Dre Greenlaw, even coming off an injury, that the market is going to be extremely robust for him. And Kyle even said it in the postseason presser that they would love to have him back, but it remains to be seen if they will be even competitive with his market on the free agent on the free market. So that's going to be interesting. Obviously, from what we saw from him when he was back and, playing, he makes a huge difference to what this defense is. But I don't know that they're going to be able to afford him because, just obviously he took the security the first time and probably cost himself. He probably could have got a bigger deal somewhere else, but decided to take the security here because they were offering, you know, a fair deal. I just don't think coming off an Achilles, he's going to give them a discount. That I think he will take the most guaranteed money he can get. And that just makes sense. If he's coming off an injury, that's the security you want. You're going to take as much guaranteed money as you can get because you just don't know. And that makes sense to me. So if it's close, if the deals are comparable, then yes, he'd probably come back here. But if he can make millions more somewhere else, it just makes sense to me that that's the way he would go. So that's going to be interesting to see. So again, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how good a job you think this really is. Again, oh, and throw into the fact that we're talking about 3 years, 3 different coordinators. Yeah. From a stability standpoint, this isn't what you would, you know, ideally be looking for. And maybe that's different if you bring Saleh in. Maybe he is somebody that they would keep around long term. But I think that Jeff Ulbrich is probably a better fit right now than even than Saleh is for lots of reasons.
My other question about this is, if the idea for Saleh, and this is what all these guys should be looking forward to, which is, okay, you have your first NFL head coaching deal, doesn't work out. Whatever you do for defense coordinator position, you're doing it with the idea you want to set yourself up for the next head coaching job. And I think the best way to do that would be to get the Niners back, you know, on top of the league. And if you can do that, that is probably your best case scenario to get in the eyes of the you know, these owners, because the, you know, they're not, they're kind of, I'm not going to say all of them, but you can clearly see, you know, these owners are just as starstruck as anybody when it comes to grabbing players. Like, I mean, the whole New York Jets and the Aaron Rodgers thing and how that worked out, I mean, it shows you that. I think Saleh has a little bit of a stench on him that is not really his fault because of how that organization is, but he also had to coach one of the weirder players, star players in the NFL, in Rodgers. And I would really like to know what the overall sort of management in the league thinks how he handled that. Like, do they hold him accountable at all for any of the goofiness that, or the freedoms that Rodgers was allowed? I don't know, but it just seems like if you are trying to sell tickets to your team, like let's say the Jaguars, like you brought up a good example, the Jaguars. One, does he want to play for, or does he want to coach a team for Trent Baalke? That is a question mark. I think Trent Baalke's name being mud is more, there's a spotlight on that maybe more than ever. And two, is that an organization that looks at Robert Saleh and goes, you know what? He was kind of screwed in that organization. And if you look under the you know, the nuts and bolts of it, he actually did a really good job. And does the fan base go, oh, Robert Saleh, yeah, that's the guy? Like, because part of this is also selling your franchise, your ticket sellers, your ticket buyers, the excitement with a coach as well. And that's why, you know, Ben Johnson is going to, you know, even if Detroit doesn't win the Super Bowl, he's going to be the one that everyone is going to fawn over. Because what's more sexy in the NFL than the ability to coach a quarterback and score points? Like Robert Saleh, his strong suit is in coaching defense. It's not in, you know, coaching up Trevor Lawrence or whatever. So that would be up to somebody else to get the best out of Trevor Lawrence. So that's the other part is trying to sell the team or the organization and the fan base on a guy who's, you know, as really stable. I mean, the Jets still had a good defense under his watch. I think they were like
third and sixth until, you know, and then they ended up 12th with a slew of injuries this year. So, yeah.
But when it came to like yards, given how many yards per game they gave up, they were right mm-hmm. there every single year. So mm-hmm. Like if I thought the Jaguars were a very smart organization, I would go, you know what? Sala would give them some stability. Like he would suck it up and do the things that he needed to do to kind of get that team back in gear. But I just don't think that they're very smart. So they're going to look for the bright lights and who's the sexiest person out there. And they're going to be the team that goes into the college ranks and tries to talk some of the college, the top yeah. college coaches into coming. Like, that's just what they do. So, you know,
and that is so successful. You know, I was doing stupid. The research on that. I was doing the research on that. And Cliff Kingsbury is the most successful in the past 20 years. And that wasn't great. So, yeah. I mean, good luck with that. I just think while I agree, the sexy thing to do is to try to bring in an offensive mind. But what the selling point for Sala is, he is going to bring in a Shanahan style offense, which I think would benefit Trevor Lawrence. And then I just think Ben Johnson, either he seems to, from all the reports say, he is enamored with Tom Brady and the pixie dust that he thinks he's going to sprinkle on that Raider situation. And that's fine. If you think they're going to come out of the draft with Shadur or Cam Ward, and you can build around that, that's fine. And then, but to me, as dysfunctional as that organization is, if you're talking about quarterbacks, I still believe in Caleb. And if I could get my hands on him to me, that's the best for an offensive coach. That's the best situation in the league right now. If I'm Ben Johnson, that's the one. Now, again, I am leery. If you talk about the Jaguars organization, that Bears organization is horrible and, you know, just bad. So there are not really any good jobs left, I don't think. But, you know, you get to a point where his stock is probably never going to be higher. Mm-hmm. So, and again, I think that with Sala too, if somebody offers him even that bad job in Jacksonville, I point to, you know, it's been 12 years since Spags was fired by the Rams. Do you think that he thought that when that happened 12 years ago, that he wouldn't have had another opportunity by now? So again, I just think there's only 32 of them. And if you can get one of them, even if you got to hold your nose to take it, you take it. You don't take the situation, well, I'll just go here as a defensive coordinator and rehab my image, because you never know with the way the cycles work and young coordinators come about, you might not ever get another shot. So you can't just be cavalierly say, well, I'll just wait till next year. We look at guys like Bieniemy, and the list goes, you know, you can make a list of guys who you would have thought, you know, those guys could have struck, you know, when Kansas City was at its peak. You know, it would have behooved him to strike then, because now that window is closed and he might not ever get a job, you know? So I just don't think you can think that, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll wait a couple years and, you know, then I'll go back on the market. If you can get one now, even if it's a bad one, because a guy like Sala will always have, even if he flames out again as a head coach, he'll always be able to be a defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Those jobs will never be a situation where somebody will look at Sala and say, nah, we're good on you as a defensive coordinator. He's had too much success at that, you know, in that role. So if you can get a Saints job or a Jags job, I think you take it, because who doesn't want to be the boss?
Yeah.
You know, being a boss is better than being a subordinate, even if you're a high paid subordinate. That was the other thing I asked about Jed. Do you think, though, you know, Fangio's making 4 or 5 as a coordinator, Zimmer's making 4. If I'm solid, why shouldn't I be in that hierarchy when it comes to if I do decide to take a coordinator job? I should be, you know, number one, I got $5 million. I can make $5 million just laying in the cut this year. Mm-hmm. The Jets are paying me. So I don't know his financial situation, but I know if I was
got like 10 kids, man.
I don't know that I would necessarily, and maybe he's the fact he's got 10 kids. You know, I'd rather be working than at home. So maybe that factors in. Maybe they can leverage that against him. Well, nah, that's good. You can just stay home. And because obviously he took that that consultant job when he got fired with the Jets rather than just going home and laying in the cut. So maybe you are able to leverage that, but I would think that based on his performance here and his defenses with the Jets, that he could, you know, negotiate to be in the top tier of salary. And I don't know that, you know, with Kyle making, they say, upwards of $15 million a year. I don't know that Jed and Parag are in the market for a top of the food chain coordinator. I don't know, but I would think that they would want to do that. Like you say, you'd want an experienced guy to come in here, and you're not going to be able to lowball him like you would somebody like Sorensen. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what direction they go in terms of him or other candidates.
According to Google, the Sala family has 7 children, so it gave them a few too many. Zane, Adam, Sam, Michael, Jacob, Ella, and Mila. Shout out to the Sala kids. Okay, so here's my other thought, which is you mentioned Ulbrich, which former 49er, I think he went to high school.
Live Oak.
So he is probably at least on par with Sala as far as somebody they want. They wanted him last year, but they couldn't actually even interview him. They were refused. I do wonder, though, if their fallback plan is simply like, well, we have Staley. You know, if we can't get who we want, we always have Staley. And that's, I think, a lot of the fans would kind of, the same thing that you just did. Shanahan said, yeah, he's around here. We'll talk to him. Tim Kawakami had a little snide comment about Staley. And he said, he heard or he understood or something to that effect that Staley goes off the record with the reporters a lot, which to me, I'm not exactly sure what Tim means. He didn't explain, but it sounded like it meant, you know, he didn't want to go on the record to say anything that could possibly maybe frustrate Shanahan. I was guessing, but he was fine going off the record with, you know, stuff that reporters couldn't use. So, I don't know if that meant, you know, gossip or whatever, but like, I just thought that was interesting. Like, yeah, he wouldn't go on the record with reporters. So,
well, the thing that the Achilles that they said, you know, leaving out of San Diego, which, you know, you have to take all that stuff with a grain of salt when people don't go on the record, is that his problem is a people problem. And that could as well, that he's, you know, going off the record talking about players and whatnot. And it's just that he is a brilliant X and O guy, but he has a problem with the interpersonal stuff. And I don't think that people seem to think that's part of the problem, is they want a guy who's rah-rah, and he doesn't seem to be that guy. I don't know. I'm not one who thinks that makes a whole hell of a lot of difference. Either you execute or you don't. Maybe, you know, you can be, you know, like I was saying earlier this week, you can be hyped up and miss a tackle and blow a coverage and miss an assignment. So I don't know how much being hyped up, you know, ultimately, I know defense is kind of an emotional job, but at the same time, if you're all hyped, but you're not executing, what the hell does that do? What does that mean? You know, so I don't know if them guys wasn't hyped up this year, but I know that they were not executing at a very high level. And I don't know if that's just because, you know, I refuse to believe it's because the, you know, these guys have been playing football for 20 plus years and have all of them have demonstrated the ability to carry out those assignments. I don't buy the fact that a coach not getting you hyped up is why you didn't make that tackle when you were lined up in the hole. You just missed the tackle. I don't know what that is, but I think I always hold the player accountable for not doing their job. I don't hold, that's just a philosophy of mine, period. If I don't get the job done, I'm not going to blame my boss for the fact that I didn't get the job done. It's my fault that I didn't do what I was hired and paid to do. So, and maybe that is a little binary, but that's
but you say that, but what was a strength of both Saleh and D'Amico? How fired up they would get for their guys on the sidelines and, you know, slapping five and really backing them up whenever they'd make big plays. Like that was a positive. That's what we were told was a positive, how demonstrative they were positively with the players. Cause Shanahan gets demonstrative mostly when he's pissed off at special teams. But you know, that was a positive now. And then Steve Wilks, you know, you didn't see much emotion from him. Nick Sorensen, you barely saw him on the sideline.
But you know, people shit on Steve Wilks, but we were 6 minutes away from winning a championship with him as a defensive coordinator, and he called a brilliant game in the Super Bowl. So I don't know.
They also had to force him out of the booth and onto the sidelines. It just did not seem like it was his personality.
Does that make sense? I mean, I don't know. I just don't know that something like that is really. Does it matter where he stands? I don't know that. And it goddamn sure doesn't make the fact that Nick Bosa, that we didn't have, you know, Hargrave and Nick couldn't make a damn play the way Chris Jones was making a play. I don't know where he stood in the stadium made a difference in that. Well, because clearly it didn't, because he was on the sideline and neither one of them could make a game-changing play. So I don't know. Again, I just think it's the players. I'm kind of interested, though, moving on, I'm kind of interested in what you think about Sorensen moving to special teams coordinator.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Yeah.
does he take it? Like, because it solves a problem for Shanahan, which is, I mean, if you trust the guy enough to be your defensive coordinator, you clearly trust him to run your special teams.
And he's done it before. And they hired, they interviewed Monken, which fulfilled, which again, they got in trouble again with that, with the Clint Kubiak thing. Interviewing Monken, you know, fulfills the Rooney rule. So they would be now, you know, they'd have a clear path if he would accept it. If, you know, that if he wanted it, he could take it. And I assume that Kubiak is going to end up being the offensive coordinator. They just need to fulfill that one, that requirement. But I don't see why that they would move off of that now, which just seems to me like I've mentioned this week that it's just, to me, it seems like a McDaniel type move where you bump him up so they can't lose him.
Right.
So now another team would have to come in and offer him, you know, the assistant head coach and OC to be able to move him, you know, to get him. If the 49ers don't give them permission, then they would need to promote him, you know, promote him above just coordinator to get him out of here. And I don't know if teams would want to, you know, do that. I don't know. So I think it seems like they're trying to address all of these openings in-house, which is not the worst thing. If he's comfortable with them, I don't know. Again, it's always tricky for me because as fans, we get all caught up in the result when I think as coaches and coordinators, we have no idea about the process that these dudes go through week in and week out and how good they are at the actual, I don't even know what their actual roles and responsibilities are, let alone how good they are at them. So, you know, I think it gets kind of tricky when you want to just when you're trying to base whether or not a coordinator is good or not simply based on the results. Because again, I guess for me it is because I put a lot of the blame pie on the Jims and Joes. Because as Warren Sapp said so eloquently, it doesn't matter how well the coach schemes it up. If the Jims and Joes can't bring that scheme to life, it's not going to matter. So the players have to actually go out there and execute the scheme. No matter how well you draw it up, if, you know, Colton McKivitz is blowing, if he's getting blown by, it doesn't matter how brilliant the play call is. If they can't block it, or if they're dropping passes, or Brock's not making good decisions, the scheme, you know, the perfect play call really doesn't matter, I don't think. So that's it. But again, I could be wrong, but I just think, you know, fans tend to, it's weird to me when you go back and you look at the all 22 and you see all these missed assignments, but the default is that the coach messed it up. It's hard for me to, you know, that Sorensen didn't tell the guy, you know, when you're in the hole with the running back, you should go ahead and make that tackle. It's hard for me to believe he didn't emphasize that we should make a play. And so again, we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
So the other person I've seen rumored, and this is a Matt Barrows rumor, who also has previous ties to the 49ers organization, is Jason Tarver, who in 2000
that's a blast from the past,
or was the assistant running backs coach, and then 05 to 2010 was the outside linebackers coach, also coached at Stanford, then was a DC for the Raiders about 10 years ago, a little bit longer than that ago, came back to the Niners in 2015. So with post Harbaugh.
Right? Oh, post Harbaugh.
I think it was post Harbaugh.
Yeah, 15 would have been.
As the linebackers coach, and is is presently the Cleveland Browns linebackers coach. I'm not sure what the Browns run as far as the wide nine, but that was just another one that kind of jumped off the page as far as
that's pretty. I mean, he's got plenty of experience. It sounds like that's a blast from the past. I hadn't thought about that name forever, but yeah, I mean, if Shanahan is comfortable with him and he thinks he can, I mean, again, I have no idea what the qualifications are actually for that job, but you know, that's the thing about veteran coaches is it is clear that when you come here, you are going to run this system. So there's not going to be any flexibility for you coming in and implementing whatever the hell it is that you prefer. You're going to run what has been run here. So it kind of lends itself to guys who have familiarity with and are comfortable with running this wide nine style, cover three, cover six, cover nine type sets. So Cleveland runs something similar to that. And then, back in the day, that was sort of what, you know, Fangio established here. And I can't recall how much they deviated once Harbaugh left. I just don't recall. But if so, then Tarver would have some experience, a lot of experience with that system. So that it makes sense. And maybe he is more, well, they already took care of the Rooney Rule with Townsend. So if they do interview him, I would think that it would have more to do with him being a serious candidate rather than just checking a box. So that would be interesting.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the players before we get to our player of the year. Where are you with all of the talk about what Brock's contract will be?
I just think that I can't imagine, one, that this is going to drag on a long time, and two, that, again, I'm just of not a belief that they're going to take a hard line on this dude. I don't think that is very prudent. So I'm thinking that this is something that's going to happen sooner rather than later. How about you? What is your read on it?
I mean, we went through the list of quarterbacks and like the comparison of the numbers. And you know, there's the flashy number that they're going to want to throw out there so that the media can run with it with all these years and all this money, when we know that the only thing that really matters is the guarantee. I think, you know, there was this discussion, you know, does he raise the market? Does he? And that was the discussion at the beginning of the year. You know, if he has a year like he did the previous year, does he all of a sudden become the highest paid quarterback in the NFL? And obviously that didn't happen. So we're at this point where, you know, what does that contract look like? Do you just get to Trevor Lawrence like we had been talking about? I think the Niners my biggest worry is Parag. I think that should be everybody's biggest worry, because he is going to, his MO, let's say, is to sort of be the defense lawyer in the situation. It's almost like, you know, baseball arbitration, right? Like you go to arbitration and you basically argue for yourself, and then the arbitration lawyer tells you all of the bad things about your skill set and why you shouldn't make the money that you want. And I almost feel like Parag is kind of similar to that. So if we look at, you know, the average per year, if he gets to, let's say, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Jared Goff, Tua, if he gets to around 53 or slightly less than 53 average per year, do you think that does it? Or do you think they're going to have to go higher more to the Trevor Lawrence, Jordan Love, Joey Burrow average per year?
I think that I don't know necessarily about those contracts, you know, Dak and Burrow and those guys. For me, like I've said before, I just think that that Trevor Lawrence number is where, if I'm his agent, that's where
He's 55 per year and a total guarantee of $160 million.
I think that's where we start. And, you know, I know I wouldn't go much below that. Now, I think the negotiation part where you hear people talking about that $180 million guarantee, I think that gets it done. I would think that if they come with a strong offer in that ballpark, that this thing wraps quickly. But if they, you know, balk about, you know, being around 160 or worse yet, want to, you know, slide him in below that, like I've heard people talk about the 130 number with Tua, I just think that's crazy. I don't know that there is an apples to apples comparison on the concussions and Brock's elbow. I just don't, you know, could he have problems with that elbow going down the, you know, in the future? Yes. But I think, you know, if I'm his representative, that's why I'm trying to get that $180 million for him to make sure that I have placed him in the best position moving forward. So I think that's where it is. I think the number is right somewhere between that 160. I think that's the floor. And I think 180 gets, I think I saw both Kruger and Barrows talk about the 180 number. I think that gets it done. If they come strong with that number, I don't think that there's much, you know, you get to talking about how it's structured. And like Lawrence is structured crazy, where it's like his guarantees are tiered to where they're like 6 years out in terms of how they hit the cap, which, you know, is smart because, you know, it makes it more palatable for the team. And I would imagine that, you know, Brock and his agents would be amicable to make it as, if they give them the number that they want, I would imagine they would, if I don't know, if I was in their position, you know, however you guys need to make it work, that's fine. As long as the number is there, you can stretch it out as far, you know, you could give me an Ohtani deal if you, if you give me the number that I'm looking for. I don't really care how we get there as long as I get my money guaranteed. So that would be interesting. But again, I just hope they don't let this thing drag out into March and April. And God forbid that we get to training camp and we're still talking about Brock Purdy's contract. I'm hoping that we are able to have a quiet, normal offseason with not a bunch of consternation and controversy, especially after last year. I just think it would be great for it to be whatever normal is in a an offseason. I would hope that we they strive to create that type of environment and get our free agents taken care of early, or let us know that they're moving on and moving into a different direction. And then, you know, we get into the whatever they do in free agency and in the draft, that it's smooth and not just a bunch of, you know, rancor and just discord. I would love an off season like that. And Brock is the guy to make that happen.
So I'm using the over the cap total guarantee numbers. If you get over 160, you're in Jordan Love territory. 167 is Tua. Jared Goff is 170. Jalen Hurts 179. Lamar Jackson 185. So that's the neighborhood that we're talking about.
That's wild.
Yeah, I don't know the difference between the total guarantee and the fully guarantee. His fully guaranteed number is lower than all of the guys that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But his total guarantee is
the fully is money that he gets no matter what, and then total guarantees includes anything guaranteed, salary that's guaranteed for injury, which is flexible, because those guarantees end up being like, if you're on the roster by March 1st, they can, you know, they can cut you, or, you know, those situations where they, if you make it through the season, you know, those situations where they will sit guys, you know, to make like we did with didn't we end up doing that with Jimmy, where we didn't want to play him because if
he would have a bonus past this thing,
it would have kicked in. So then we just, you know, we put him on ice so that those injury, you know, you don't want to like twist an ankle and be like, you know, that money is I'm guaranteed for injury. So yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what that comes out to. But I just, those that Love and Lawrence and those guys, I think that he is right there in that ballpark. And as you know, whatever, however deserve goes into, you know, those contracts. I don't know that worth and deserve necessarily factor in to contracts. The example I use is, I mean, we have a guy, you know, just signed $765 million contract in baseball. Does he deserve, or is he worth that? I don't know. But, you know, that's what the market bears. So I think that has more to do with it than when we start talking about, well, he doesn't deserve that kind of, well, who does? But I mean, it's what it is. So I think that he is, when you look at the comps, that's the neighborhood that he's in. He's for sure in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I feel like Lamar and Josh Allen and Mahomes are all going to renegotiate their contracts.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay, we talked about Dre. That, you know, Dre is sort of rumored to be priced. The 49ers are rumored to be priced out from Dre. They did make a comment about Debo, about how they, you know, that he is a really good player and we need him for 2025. I think he is a great complement to Brandon Ayuk. I still think, you know, I've been saying this for 2 years now, we need to find some speed up top to kind of alleviate some of the pressure there of these guys, you know, getting stuck because no one expects them to beat the defense over the top. So that's great to hear about Debo and his, you know, he is somebody who probably, when it came to the seasons that they expected from him, not the best last two seasons, but also he kind of gave it everything the previous season, you know, before that. So I would like to see maybe they'd be a little bit more creative with them. It just seemed like their usage of him was so predictable this year, even when Christian came back. So I would like to, you know, I don't know what it would take. I don't know if they believe Debo has lost a step or whatever it is, but I just would like them to be a little bit more creative with his positioning on the football field, like he was early in his career, because he was such a dynamo once he got his hands on the ball.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the last game that he played, he really showed up and showed out. So, I mean, he can still do it. Now the question is, with, you know, you start to get to where at a point where can he do that every week, because of, you know, when does the mileage start to show up with him and the way he plays and the, you know, he's just so forceful and aggressive, and he punishes defenders, but also he ends up being punished too with, you know, this his style of play. So I don't know that that style of play ages very well. And then, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's still pretty cost prohibitive for moving off of him this year in terms of the dead cap hit. And it is a lot more palatable a year from now, you know, so that I would imagine that plays a role in it in terms of, you know, bringing him back. It really is one of those situations where it's cheaper to keep him at this point, you know, in the whole grand scheme of things, when you're already, you know, taking a dead cap hit with moving off of Hargrave. I don't know that you do that with both of them in this, you know, this upcoming season, if you're striving to be competitive. Because if you're like the Denver Broncos, as they turned out, and they made the playoffs this year, but they decided they were going to just take the hit with that huge. And then again, I know that they're, you know, the Walton family and Jed and them, that we're talking two different stratospheres in terms of, you know, they took the biggest dead cap hit in league history with that Russell Wilson contract. And I don't know that we're in the same position to be able to eat both of those contracts in the same year. And then I am hopeful for what we saw from Debo in the last, you know, the week before the last game of the, I don't even remember if he played in the finale. That game is, you know, it's a blur. I don't really remember much about that Cardinal game. But I know in the game prior to that, he looked strong and was running hard and looked like Debo, you know, for one of the first times, you know, in a long time. So I'm hopeful that is the case. And then, you know, we get Christian back and, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. If we crush the draft and we crush free agency, that we can be right back in the mix. If not at the top of the league, you can damn sure win our division. And once you get into the tournament, who knows, you know, so I'm cautiously hopeful about us moving forward. And I just hope we crush this offseason.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hargrave, it looks like he's on his way out, though they tried to save face publicly and say that they would love to bring him back. But essentially, they cut him and they would have to renegotiate a brand new contract with him. Mm-hmm. There might be some personal emotions there that I would feel if that was the
right,
but it's also the game, and Hargrave understands the game too, so I'm sure he will look for his best possible spot to play at. So those are kind of the players. Do you have any last thoughts on Hargrave before we get to our player of the year?
Just very disappointing. And you know, it seems that the consensus is that, you know, he got that big contract based on the studs that surrounded him in Philly. And, you know, good for him. He got his money, but he could not match that production where he was counted upon to be one of those stud players that other players were able to eat off of. It's unfortunate that, you know, I was surprised that they took the shot. And then it's always frustrating when you take that shot.
He wasn't even on any of our radars when they signed him. So
it's very reminiscent of the D4 signing, where we had these high expectations and he just didn't fulfill them. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
All right, so this is the sound edit that we would play for the Coach Singh player of the game. We're just going to use it for the Coach Singh player of the year.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
I was thinking about this, and you know, you have full autonomy in making this selection as you have all year long. I thought from the get-go, this was a two-player race. I have a Fred and I have George, and I guess you do, if you were to pick a third, it might have to be Bosa, just because he, you know, he's still a force, but I wouldn't consider this to be one of his better years. The eye test tells me, and then I didn't even see him in the top five when it came to quarterback hurries or anything like that. So, but he would probably still be third. That just kind of tells you what a down year it was for most 49ers. He or Brock, like you can't take away Brock's consistency, but I'm assuming it's either Fred or
my,
George.
Yep. You hit my, my Olympic podium. Cause that would have been, you know, Bosa would have been my bronze medalist. And then it comes down to Fred and George. You know, just based on the fact that Fred was still so productive when he played, you know, a good portion of the season, all banged up.
Most of the season.
And then, you know, it was verified with his first team all pro designation, which, you know, I think it was well deserved.
I was really bothered that Kittle fell behind Bowers, though.
Yeah, I
shiny new toy syndrome, man. That's the frustration.
That was the you know, that has been the discord this week. I don't have a huge problem with it when you factor in the fact that he was a rookie and he had, you know, O'Connell and Minshew throwing the ball, but you have to also factor in that he didn't have any target share competition, and so, and you know, amassed 153 targets, which is insane. That's an insane usage. It's an insane usage rate. But you know, and to his credit, it was the most prolific rookie tight end season in history. So again, while I'm disappointed for George, because as you get along, you see how important, particularly first team all pros, factor into your Hall of Fame candidacy. And you could make the case that George has three fewer than he should, which if he had four or five would solidify that candidacy even more so. But I just think that even if he doesn't go in the first round, he's the kind of guy, he's a tailor-made kind of guy that the Veterans Committee, you know, guys who actually played with him will acknowledge as, you know, one of the best, you know, of his era. It sucks because I, you know, as I get older, those type of accomplishments, they matter. I, you know, being a Hall of Famer matters. I mean, and those are the steps that lead you to that. When you look at just the voting and how it goes, those first team all pros mean a lot. So it sucks for him, and I feel sorry for him, but I definitely think that he is, you know, right up there with Kelce as the best tight ends of their generation. And I think that that should be acknowledged. That should have been acknowledged as the seasons went on. I think Kelce might have got a few that he shouldn't have got. But I mean, he's just such a great player. It's hard to kind of make that argument. But I think George is right there. I think when you, his numbers suffered because he had to do so much more as a blocker than Kelce did. Kelce is a glorified receiver. And, you know, George put up those type of numbers and especially in 18 and 19, where he was the X and a tight end, which is why he was able to reset the tight end market in terms of salary, because he was more than just a tight end. And again, I think all those things should factor in to his candidacy as a Hall of Famer. And I hope he gets there, because I think he is one. And I think this season, just based on what he did for the team, you know, second team All Pro, he was, I know he was far and away, he won the most players of the week, and he was a Lynn Eshmont Award winner. So he is the top of my podium. He is my player of the year.
Oh, that's awesome. I would have probably gone Kittle as well, but it is pretty clear that Fred Warner is seen by not only his peers, but just by the national media. Like, he is seen as, and maybe some of this has to do with kind of Bosa's, like, aw shucks, like, meathead personality. Fred Warner is seen as, like, the most, like, impressive guy. Like, not only is he a leader on the team, but he's kind of no nonsense, and he plays through injuries and all these things. And, it, you know, I think that does go far and wide when it comes to awards like this. Like, the dude played on a broken ankle for most of the year. So what?
And I mean, he's very, very polished, and, you know, it is, he is, you know, he's seen, you know, like you say, not just here locally, but nationally as the heartbeat of the team. And I don't know that that's necessarily wrong. We've talked before about Dre and how they, you know, coexist, in that, you know, if I were, you know, he wasn't here this year, obviously, for most of it. But if you talked about, to me, Warner is clearly the better player, but I think Dre is like the heartbeat of the team. I always go to the Steph Draymond comparison, that I think that Dre is the Warriors Draymond, mm-hmm. In terms of the defense. But Fred Warner is closing in on, and I thought it was prematurely bestowed upon him, but he is closing in on Patrick Willis, who was the most impactful linebacker of my, you know, fandom, inside linebacker of my fandom. And quietly, man, it shocked me when Willis was voted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
went back and started looking at Bowman's numbers. He, a few more seasons, and he has a sneaky strong case as a Hall of Famer. I think he falls short, but he was really good. And I think Fred is right there. He is, you know, at 28 years old, he with four All Pros, he is right there on the cusp of, you know, Hall of Fame consideration, which is, you know, awesome to see. You like to see when the guys who you watch, you know, put together those type of resumes, and then 5 years afterwards or so, you know, to see them in Canton is always cool. Like I said before, that when Frank goes in, I'm going to Canton because he was my guy. And yeah, to see, you know, I don't think there's any question at this point, you know, he has the resume that he will be eventually a Hall of Famer. And I want to be there to witness that. So I think it's just really cool when you see guys who you watch their entire careers, when you're old enough to say that I watched, you know, because guys like Ronnie Lott and those guys and Joe, you know, I was a baby. I didn't really understand what was going on. I knew they were good, obviously, but, you know, Frank, I saw the whole progression. I saw him his entire career. And, you know, it's just, it's special. Those guys are special. And, you know, and Bam Bam too, I saw his whole career, but again, Frank is my guy. So I'm going to be really excited to see him go in. And then it will be good to see Warner when and if his time, because I think it will. Because honestly, I was kind of, when you look at the numbers, I thought that BY was a borderline candidate, and for him to get his flowers as soon as he did, because he really didn't have to wait all that long, was a pleasant surprise as a Niner fan who watched his whole career. And I know that people are still kind of bummed out about Roger Craig, and he is a borderline case as well, because if you really boil it down, it's really only three seasons that he performed at that level, and then the other six are just kind of, so if he were to get in, that would be great, but I don't see it as this huge robbery at that as other people do. If you made, you can definitely make a case for him being a Hall of Famer, but if he's not, then it's disappointing. But again, I don't think it's a robbery. I don't know how we got on the Hall of Fame. it's really cool. I'm really glad that Fred was acknowledged as an All Pro this year.
Kittle, his contract is up after next year, I believe. Do they, because they're in the, we are in the era of salary cap gymnastics, do you think they extend him 1 or 2 years so that they can knock down his price for next year as they sort of figure out with the Brock Purdy stuff and who they want to bring back and all that?
I would hope so. I mean, he is such a wonderful, because this year showed that he still has gas in the tank. So just from that standpoint, I think that's a good play. But we, as we have seen, all other soft stuff, you know, if you give Eric Armstead a $6 million offer, it stands to, the question has to be asked how much that other soft stuff matters to you in the grand scheme of things, because he gave his all as a player and was injured because of that. Giving his all, and then, you know, the marketing that they did of his good works and community, would have thought that would have bought him some goodwill, but clearly it didn't. I just think that George is that kind of 49er that if there was a guy that you bump, give him a bump in terms of what his actual market value is versus what, you know, I don't know where he is at. I think he's 31 now,
32.
Where he's gonna 32, so you bump him up 2 years, where is he gonna be at 34? I don't know again. I was writing him off this year. I thought that we had seen the best of George. Clearly I was wrong, as I've said many times. So I don't know where. Hopefully there's a number that they could come to that they do extend him and it doesn't come down to where he gets anywhere near free agency. I think that's just he is the type of guy, it's a relationship business, and I think a guy like him should be rewarded for all that he's given. But I know front offices by and large, and even, you know, our, you know, the guy who's in the center of the picture right now, Bill Walsh didn't believe in that type of, you know, compensation. You know, he was really a bottom line guy. And I don't know what a bottom line assessment of George Kittle at 34, 35 years old is. I don't have any idea how we get there. But I hope so. I really do. He is a guy that I definitely would like to see around. Same as Juice. I would like to see us take care of those guys and keep them around, because I believe that while they, you know, again, Juice was second team All Pro again this year. So they're still playing at a high level, but I think that their value is beyond just what they give us on the field. And I think that's important. I think that it's important for the young guys to see that as they move on, and for players who might consider this place as a free agent destination, if you do right by us, we're going to do right by you. I think that's important. And maybe I'm just a softy, but a softy, especially when it's with other people's money, that I think those things should be rewarded. But I hope so. I really do hope so.
All right, let's end with this, which is the playoffs are here. The first round is not completely over because we do have a Rams and Vikings game on Monday night. Unfortunately, because of the fires in Los Angeles, which is just so terrible, the game has moved to Arizona. So the Rams don't have home field advantage. You know, they don't have the best home field advantage in the NFL anyway, but still, you know, you win your division so that you do at least get one home game, and which they did. The other games that you saw, so on Saturday, the Texans kind of walked away with the game with the Chargers. It was close early on, but interceptions and such, and that game kind of got away from the Chargers. 32-12 Texans. So D'Amico and the boys get to go to the next round. And then the Ravens beat the Steelers fairly easily, actually, 28-14. And then just today, the Bills made easy work of the Broncos, 31-7. And the Eagles also made fairly easy work of the Packers, 22-10. And then the Commanders in maybe the upset. I don't know if the Commanders game and the Texans game, those lines were pretty close. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also the Commanders going into Tampa to play that game, and they got it because of a field goal that that our guy probably wouldn't have made.
That was my post is after the game is that Zane Gonzalez, I posted him in his number 10 jersey with us, that this guy is kicking next week while our third round draft pick isn't. So yeah, that was very interesting. Also, we got a big play, first play of the game. Orin Burke, you know, made a huge special teams hit versus the Packers that caused a fumble and was instrumental in getting the Eagles started off on a good foot. So, you know, we can make the playoffs about the 49ers. And then, of course, you got Nico and his second playoff win, which is, you know, when the Niners aren't playing, that's kind of how I lean as I start rooting for guys with ties. So I was really bummed about, you know, the Chargers kind of laying an egg because I was rooting for Harbaugh.
Yeah.
And I was rooting for D'Amico as well. You know, so that one worked out. But yeah, it was very interesting. Like you say, that last game was probably the best of the weekend. Tampa and Tampa and Washington, it's really cool to see, you know, those rookies, you know, growing up the way they did, the way they are. You know, Jaden Daniels, I was listening to the pregame, and Dan Quinn was talking about how, you know, Tampa, you know, kind of blew the doors off him week one. And it's, you know, like he was saying, it's going to be a litmus test of how far we have come in 18 weeks. And it was, I mean, they were really good and right there. And, you know, they were the ones who ultimately made the plays when it counted. And, you know, obviously it took a doink doink to win the game, but, you know, that it's really good to see young teams like the Commandos and the Texans, you know, make these strides so early. And I guess the Texans aren't as young, and they're young in spots, but they've got a lot of vets there too that kind of offset their youth. But the Commandos, this is all new for them, and it's, you know, it's kind of exciting to see young teams, you know, get their sea legs in the playoffs. So yeah, it's gonna. I like you. You had mentioned coming in. You're kind of interested in seeing what the Rams are able to do tomorrow. As am I. Not necessarily rooting for them, but I take interest in our conference games.
You think Shanahan is got the voodoo doll out for McVay, or do you think he's paying attention that closely to see what they're doing? Like, is he keeping an eye on his guy or his, one of his former buddies?
It kind of strikes me. They all kind of strike me, and I don't know. I think it's influenced by that wonderful podcast that we both listen to. I don't know why, it just, in my mind, they seem like the ultimate frenemies.
Yeah, they do.
Again, frenemies just kind of come. So I definitely think that he's watching. I think he's lying if he's saying he's not watching. And I would not be surprised if he's got a voodoo doll over there. And I'm sure part of him wants to see him be successful, but then I know there's part of him that wants to see him be crushed.
The petty side obviously does it. And it's a thing with Shanahan too, probably. Not that Shanahan probably cares too much about the national media's thought, but the talk is that, yeah, like, Shanahan, he was a sort of a Shanahan, not that he was always an understudy of Shanahan, but they're kind of on the same squad for early in their career, but that McVay has surpassed Shanahan. Like, Shanahan was seen as the young genius, and then McVay kind of took that mantle from him. And it's all about, what have you done for me lately? McVay takes a very you could say that they were kind of an average team for most of the year in the Rams, and they fought over the top to win the division. The Niners could have done the same thing, and they just did not. And it's a what have you done for me lately league. So I could see why people would say, yeah, it's McVay. Plus, McVay's one up on him when it comes to
he won a championship. And, and it's so weird that he owned McVay in the regular season, has owned McVay in the regular season up until that NFC champ. So it's like the one game that they lose is like the most important.
Yeah.
Because I think we had beat them like 10 straight going into that NFC championship game that we ended up losing, that they ended up, because, and again, I don't know, we had a lot of injuries going on, but it really did seem to me that if the NFC team, whoever came out of that game was going to win that Super Bowl. And obviously we lost it. So it like you say, it that lends to the feeling, the Super Bowl, it carries such weight. And then, it does seem like, McVay is now the guy. And now you've got that interesting dynamic because, kind of what Kyle is to him, he is to O'Connell. So that's an interesting dynamic. And I know we don't, this is 49er podcast, but I just think it's weird that, people are talking, he's, going into a lame duck season, and people are talking about he might be available for trade, O'Connell, which is bananas. It would just be crazy to think that a team would, because he just seems to be like such a great coach. The Vikings were, I bet them this offseason, their over under was 7.5, and they, damn near doubled up on that.
They hit the over by like week 8 or 9.
It was crazy. They were so good. People were so, Sam Darnold or a rookie. And it's crazy. You know, I know Bomani Jones calls him same Darnold. and last week didn't do anything to dissuade that argument. But yeah, the fact that they're here is, you know, it's a credit to, you know, Darnold did play well. And O'Connell got him there. So it's going to be a very good game, which I had completely forgot about until you reminded me of it. I thought, whoo, five games this week, this weekend. Whoo, I'm all footballed out. But nope, we got one more tomorrow. So that's very, very, you know, it's good. I always like having a Monday game. It kind of breaks up my, you know, my work day. Gives me something to look forward to and to get home early and watch. So yeah, it's out.
All right, let's make some quick predictions. We made our Super Bowl predictions last week, but Texans and Chiefs Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Texans at Chiefs. Chiefs finally got a two week break essentially. They should be raring and ready to go. I would love to see Houston make this game a really competitive game, though.
Yeah, I would too. I don't know that they will, because they played this week.
They played them well, didn't they? They played them pretty well during the regular season.
They did. And today was a not today. Whenever that game was, whenever they played, they all running together, but that was a revelation because they kind of scuffled to the finish line this season. They got out to that early lead with their division, and then they really did not play great heading into the playoffs. So that was yesterday, because it was disappointing to see Harbaugh and their offense and defense just kind of fall apart in spots. So it's going to be interesting to see. I would imagine that Kansas City is going to be a prohibitive favorite, but like you said, I, at this point of the season, that's all I'm rooting for is close games. And that was really not the case. Like you say, most of the games, you know, the teams this weekend, they were kind of over early. Yeah. So it would be nice. I think that Baltimore Buffalo game
That's the matchup of the year right there.
Yeah. I think, you know, both of them have something to prove. And then again, whatever happens, they'll have something to prove again the next week. Because if it goes the way it's going to go, where it's Kansas City, both of them have Kansas City demons that they need to to excise. So that, but I'm hoping that their game is good. And then I guess the NFC games are still up in the air based on what happens.
Commanders and Lions on Saturday.
Oh, but so yeah. that is settled. Okay. Mm-hmm. But so I guess the Eagles game, it's just basically where they're going to be playing.
Who they're going to be playing? If Minnesota is to it doesn't matter if the Rams or Minnesota win, they still go to Philly no matter what, right?
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure of that. Yeah,
because they're the number two seed. Philly's the number
that's
two.
Right,
seed.
That's right. You're right. You're right. Yeah, you're 100% right. So yeah, it's who's going to Philly.
Going to Philly. So yeah, you know, I think the Commanders and their young, exciting quarterback. I think a lot of people are excited to see his trajectory. And you know, if they go and give Detroit a scare, that would be a really good moment for him. I do expect Detroit to win this game and probably by a decent amount, just based on how they played in the regular season and how they played the playoffs last year until they got to the Niners. And then when it comes to the Eagles, I think both teams are going to play the Eagles pretty tight. I think that will be a closer game than most. Should be a good weekend. And I will pay a lot more attention. I just needed the week off from football.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But next week is when I'm going to be picking it back up. I just kind of want to see, okay, what did the Niners, what is ahead of them? Like, what are the, who are the teams that they have to compete with? Like, what are these teams doing that the Niners aren't doing? That's kind of how I watch playoff football. So
yeah. How far away are we?
Right. Okay. That is it from here. So for Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.